inspiration that lights us up, providing a new pathway to personal revelation, maybe even an epiphany. Call them what you will, but they are stories of defining moments on Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication studies at the University of Houston downtown, and I'm with two terrific tellers and superlative individuals. Let me tell you something about them. Featured teller at festivals, permanent fixture on the Traveling Artists for Texas Commission of the Arts, recipient of the prestigious John Henry Falk Award in Storytelling, author, teller in residence at the upcoming International Storytelling Center at Jonesboro, Tennessee, member of the Houston Storytellers Guild, and all of that is on Mondays. You know, Sheila Starks Phillips can captivate any mammal, literally. Sheila, or Zoo Lady, as she is labeled affectionately, is a zoologist by training and, in my opinion, has evolved into the storyteller incarnate. He recently published an article in Health Communication, cited fittingly in the journal section entitled Defining Moments. But it's also an example of the countless achievements that my very good friend and colleague, Dr. Tom Workman, professor of allied health sciences at the Baylor College of Medicine, achieved. As one of the nation's leaders in the field of health communication, Tom examines narratives, human stories, as a way to capture the journeys of people challenged by circumstances surrounding their health, and as a way to understand more completely the raw feelings that envelop the human spirit. I'm proud to call these people my friends. We are friends, right? I mean, am I lying about that?
I
paid everybody enough. Okay, great. Sheila, you are a marvelous storyteller, and I know that sometimes we think about human narratives, personal stories, when we think about revelations and defining moments, but you know that folk tales and fables can also cleverly help us discover some of those defining moments, and you have a special one for us that I'm somewhat familiar with, the Emperor's Seed.
I do. Are you ready for that?
I am.
A long time ago in ancient China, there once lived an emperor. He was a good and benevolent ruler. Everyone loved him, but he was growing quite old, and he began to worry about who would replace him when he was gone. There was no one within his family that he thought suitable, and no one within his court that he thought suitable either. And so he came up with a brilliant idea. He sent out a decree and invited all the young boys and the young men to come to the palace. When they arrived and lined up before him in front of the great hall, he said, "One of you will be the next emperor." Well, the minute he said that, there were great whispers among them. They began to nudge one another. "Me? I could be the next emperor? Surely I can't be. How can that be?" He asked for silence. He held up his hand and said, "Today I will give each one of you a seed, and I will ask you to take it home and plant it and grow what you will, and in 1 year's time return with what you have grown. I will be the judge, and whoever has produced the most spectacular thing, that boy will be the next emperor." And then the emperor passed among the boys, and he handed each one a white seed, a small white seed. Now, among those boys was a young man named Ling. He was just 12 years old. He very carefully carried that seed in the palm of his hand and rushed home, and he showed it to his mother. He lived with his widowed mother and did everything he could to make her life easier. He told her what the emperor had said, and she helped him pick out just the right pot and just the right planting soil, and he planted his seed. Now, through the next few days, he would water it just right, not too much, just enough. He would make sure that the seed was in the sunshine for part of the day and in the shade for part of the day. He made sure that the soil was always loose in the pot. Yet nothing grew. 3 weeks passed, and still nothing sprouted. But he continued to care for the seed. When he would be out and about, he would hear the other boys talk about the seed they had planted. "Oh, you should see my bush," one would say. "It is getting fat and big." "Well, you should see my plant. It has a million buds on it. It's going to bloom into wonderful flowers. I'm growing a tree, and already it's this tall." And yet Ling's seed did not sprout. The months passed, and then the full year passed. It was time to return to the palace. Ling didn't want to go. He was too embarrassed and humiliated, but his mother encouraged him, said, "It's okay to go with the empty pot." His mother asked him to be honest about what happened, so he joined the long procession of boys and young men going to the palace. They stood in that great hall with each one holding what they had produced, magnificent plants of all variety. Ling stood at the back with his empty pot. His head hung low. The emperor came in. He surveyed the boys and what they had produced. He walked down the line of boys, and he would comment, and he would encourage, and he would admire. And then he spotted Ling standing at the back of the group. His head hung low, and he called him forward. "Come, come tell me your name." Ling walked very slowly to the front. The emperor cupped his hand and his chin and lifted Ling's head high so he was looking at all the other young men, who were by now laughing among themselves and pointing and making fun. The emperor looked at Ling and said, "You are the next emperor." There was a gasp among the crowd in the great hall. What could he mean? He grew nothing. He had an empty pot. And then the emperor told them, "A year ago to this very day, I gave each of you a seed. Each seed was a boiled seed that meant it would never, ever sprout. And yet when you found that it would not sprout, everyone except Ling substituted another seed, and that's how you came forth with all these beautiful plants and these bushes and trees. But Ling was the only one honest enough to come back with an empty pot." He turned to Ling, and then he turned to the crowd of people and said, "Behold your next emperor. If you plant honesty, you will reap trust, and you will pay for the choices that you plant today." The emperor seed.
Thank you, Sheila. You know, the connection between honesty and trust. You know, it sounds so unprofound, but it's so very true. And folktales and fables for centuries have tried to keep culture and traditions alive in our lives, as well as some of these incredible core values. Thank you. You know, you remind me of what Pablo Picasso once said. He said that it takes a long time to become young, and I think that would be you, because you have this magnificent kind of juvenile animation when you tell these stories that make these folktales and these fables come to life, and they're just marvelous, just marvelous. You are listening to Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal, and I am here with Sheila Starks and Sheila Starks Phillips. And who are you again? Oh yeah, Tom Workman, my very good friend, right? Yeah, well, who are you people? Sometimes I feel like I can't even speak, and I don't know anybody around me, but you get that idea. Thank you so much. This is magnificent. When we talk a little bit about the idea of, you know, trust and honesty, and we talk about some of these revelations in our lives. Well, one of the things that I think about is the kind of defining moment that helped shape the world, helped shape the country, and obviously we're well into the 21st century, so we have kind of a reference point in terms of the sorts of things that have been happening. If you had to think about the one thing in the 20th century and the 21st century that you feel served as a defining moment, what would they be, Tom? What's the one thing that happened in the 20th century that you think it was a defining moment for our country?
Well, I think we've had many. In fact, I think we just had one. I think that some of our most defining moments are the way in which we remember things, and we remember a moment. So we've just celebrated is the wrong word. We've just remembered 9/11, mm-hmm. And as I watched all the different programming and certainly all the news media and all the craziness that went around that, it to me was clearly a defining moment, and the way in which many of us differently approached that event spoke volumes about us collectively and individually.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. I sometimes people wonder whether we should keep doing this every year. I can't imagine that we can't.
Correct.
And that we shouldn't.
Oh, it needs to be remembered, and it seems like it's the tragedies that are the defining moments. The death of Kennedy, both Robert and John, the hurricanes, Katrina, and those are all defining moments and
but
things,
you know,
we remember.
Sheila,
that.
What's so interesting about that to me is that I don't know that it's the event as much as it is our reaction.
Our reaction
to the
to
event.
It. Absolutely.
And so to hear for me that the memory that I hope we keep alive are the stories of the magnificent ways in which we've responded. I wish we could do a little bit less with some of the less magnificent ways that we respond,
right,
but
right.
Those stories of the magnificent ways that we respond to those trying times.
Those heroes among us.
Yes.
Yeah, I do, and I think that's a very good point. The way that we respond to these moments is really what makes them frozen in time, when you think about it. They have to be embedded in our mind before they can be frozen in time. We can't forget them. There has to be a way of documenting them. I know that I journal, and I know that many storytellers do. We have to keep these alive in some kind of raw form so that we can recreate them, resurrect them, and really plant that image in our minds so we are able to share them with others. We have to make sure that they are alive. And I was doing a little bit of research online, and I was amazed at what some people view to be the defining moments. Let me just read a few of these. Okay, in the 20th century, some of these won't be, these will be obvious, but 5,000 people were asked in the New York City area, what are the top defining moments in the 20th century? Now, some people had to think that there was a 20th century. They were pretty young. Okay. Yeah. Don't laugh out there. Many of these listeners are laughing. You know, we're not exactly near death yet in here. We were born in the 20th century, but yes. In the early part of the 20th century, that's the unfortunate part.
Very,
of that.
Very early.
Okay, so here are what some people are saying. The American Revolution.
Yeah.
Good. The Lewis and Clark Expedition, Western Migration, the California Gold Rush, the Civil War, the Industrial Revolution, Pearl Harbor, Vietnam, the Moon Landing, the Dawn of the Information Age, right? And, of course, 9/11, but that technically is the 21st century. And here's what people said in the 21st century. Listen to the trend. Listen to these differences. Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Pop Idol.
Mm-hmm.
The Sopranos. Slumdog Millionaire. We're looking at media. We're looking at films. We're looking at books. The trend is, I think, incredible. Here's one we can't possibly live without. Facebook. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm going to have to get on a Facebook page because this is the only possible way I can reach my son. He has a phone, but he won't answer it.
Hank, I've been waiting to friend you.
You see, the thing is that I was not under the impression that there was anybody who wanted to befriend me, but apparently there's somebody out there
who would
really like me to be part of Facebook. And now that I'm viewing Facebook as clearly a defining moment, I can't possibly see how I can deny that. Okay, in the meantime, yeah. I wonder what would happen if I put myself on Facebook and said to my son, Josh, here's a thought, no more money until you call me. I wonder if you think that would work. Is that a message we can put on Facebook? But here are some others that are very serious, and I'm glad that these are on here. The Darfur genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And that's incredible. I'm a docent at the Holocaust Museum, as the two of you know, and many people in the community. And one of the things that I try to make very clear is that by defining moments, we have to realize that some of these tragic moments that Sheila so eloquently articulated a few moments ago, and Tom reinforced by saying it's how we respond, is that we have to start looking at things like tolerance as a verb. We have to understand that to tolerate people in this world requires a very good response, a clear response. And without that, we've got a problem. And then, of course, we have other weird defining moments. We know how humid it is here. The other day, I walked out in the university parking lot, and my glasses were so steamed, I couldn't see a thing, and I almost walked in front of a car and got killed. Okay? Now, is that a defining moment? The guy's yelling and screaming and saying, oh, my God, what are you doing? Said, I can't see anything. Well, take off your glasses. Well, then I certainly can't see anything. So I don't know if that's a defining moment, but I do know that it segues into Laura's traffic report. Right, Laura?
Right. The time is 9:44. This is KPFT Houston, and here is a quick update on traffic. There is a 3-vehicle pileup on the 610 South Loop, eastbound at alternate 90. 2 main lanes are affected and 1 shoulder lane also. The current temperature is 85 degrees. Humidity is 71%. Today will remain partly cloudy with a 30% possibility of rain. The high will be 90 degrees and the low 74 degrees. Air quality is in the good range. Please stay tuned after today's Community Spotlight story time for the 420 Drug War News, and that will be followed by Wide Open Spaces with Rourke Smith at 10 o'clock, and then Radioactive with Rhonda and Phil at 1 o'clock. And now back to story time.
Thank you. You know, boy, I'll tell you, we're just waiting this time of year, wondering, will it be under 90? Let's grab our sweaters and coats. Anybody else standing by their closet every day?
I can't wait.
Tom, you and I had a great dinner a couple weeks ago, and one of the things we talked about was our high school reunions. I went back for my 40th, and boy, all I talked about with you is how great I look. And it's true, everybody out there, I look so good for a very old person. But Tom, you really, I thought the story that you shared with me was riveting. I do. I loved the way that you talked about it, because it just struck me that this was, if it wasn't the defining moment in your life, it had to be up there. And I'm happy to report that it was your defining moment. And I'd love it if you could share your reunion with us, because I think that the listening audience will find this to be a remarkable story.
Well, thank you, Hank. You know, if you had told me, actually, that my 30th high school reunion would actually be a defining moment, I would have laughed at you.
Reason to say 30, because that means you're younger and we don't care.
But go right ahead. Younger, it's all relative, Hank. Younger than some, and definitely older than most who are on Facebook. So there you go. Honestly, I've avoided reunions of all kinds for all these years. I've not attended any of my reunions. I've ignored all of the invitations. I've decided that I wasn't going to do any reunions, and I did that for two reasons. One is that they always seem focused on the past, and I'm much more interested in the present. You know, for me, life is an awful lot like a chapter book. We all have these passages, and actually mine feels a little bit more like a collection of short stories. And each seems to have its own plot line. It has its own cast of characters. It has its own scenery, and usually takes place in different states. Most of the passages of my life seem to be very distinct from all the other ones, and I simply move on to the next story without spending a lot of time thinking back on the last one. They've been different careers, they've been different promises and different challenges as different stages of my life has occurred. So when I agreed that I was going to return to my high school reunion, they had asked me to reprise a song from a show that I did when I was in high school. And I reluctantly agreed. I don't know what I was thinking, that not only would I come back 30 years later, obviously looking much older, but now asked to sing on top of all of that. But I really went saying that you know, it would be fun. But I wasn't interested at all in reliving the past. I really like my now. And I figured that no one was really all that interested in hearing about all the other stuff that had happened to me. I really figured that no one was really all that interested in reliving the past. You know, I thought that perhaps everyone was going to be there, and they were all going to be asking the same question of each other. What happened to him? And what has he done since then? And the truth is that I'm really happy with what's happened to me. I like the different chapters. I like the different stories that have happened. Nothing that I'm ashamed of. And I loved high school. I thought I made the most of it. Mm-hmm. I got very active and very involved, and I made the most of those 4 years, and they were over, and there was really no reason to go back. Nothing to go back for. Now, I also have to tell you that Lincolnshire, Illinois, where I grew up and where I went to high school, had not stood still these 30 years either. They had certainly changed. The area was once filled with 3-acre lots and cornfields. It was a small, sleepy, wasn't even a suburb of Chicago back then. It was way, way out in the super boonies, and it was a little quiet farm town. Well, it had slowly evolved instead to becoming the northwest corner of Chicago's urban sprawl. It had corporate headquarters with these tall buildings. It had all these expanded highways and vast subdivisions, all filled with homes that were on these little quarter-acre lots, and there were 1,000 strip malls. In fact, everything was a strip mall. I don't know quite how they all survived, tell you the truth. In other words, we had both moved on. It wasn't just me who had gone on to live my life. My hometown had entered an entirely different story that wasn't the story of 30 years ago. Both of our stories had changed, so there seemed to be no reason to reconnect. Then I walked into the reunion. And I walked into rehearsal especially, and I saw all of my old friends, the people that I was closest to, because they were the people that I had done these activities like theater and choir and band with. And they were all the people I realized that I had grown up with, and it was as if no time had passed at all. We hugged and we talked and we shared with each other all of our different elements. We actually caught one another up in a way that I had never expected. And what I realized is that these people were a little bit different. These people from 30 years ago, from my hometown, were the people who shared with me my first discoveries of my interests, my anxieties, my talents, my weaknesses, my dreams. These were the people who shared with me the most turbulent journey of that time through puberty, sexual awakening, newfound independence, first loves, first disappointments, first victories, acne, awkward bodies, teachers who didn't get us, and those wonderful teachers who did. We had shared all of those things, and the greatest surprise as we connected over the weekend was that no one wanted to talk about the past. No one was interested in that former chapter. We all had conversations that focused on today, the challenges and the joys of our present journey. We talked about kids. We talked about our kids, our careers, our marriages, our divorces, our second marriages, our homes, our mortgages, our aging bodies, our taxes, the economy, the recession, the new technologies. We talked about our lives now, but those conversations were so dramatically different than the conversations we had ever had, I had ever had with anyone else. Our most common subject, the era's main subject for all of us, was about losing parents. Mm-hmm. It was in every one of our conversations. We grieved collectively about our losses for those moms and dads who once drove us home from the games or from the shows or rehearsals and they were now gone. Or we shared our exhaustion in caring for our ailing parents that didn't have too much longer to go. And that really is where it struck me that the magic of my return to my high school reunion had really nothing to do with reliving the past. It was about touching home base. You know, we all have a home base, a constant that grows all the rest of our experience. It grounds us. And it's filled with people who know us best. I mean, the people who really know us because they've known us from the beginning. I realized that the conversations I was having with these old friends was so different from the thousands I've had with my new associates or friends since. And it was because these folks knew my history, because we shared something from the beginning that made our sharing the present all that more special. They were, in many sense, my home base, our home base. They understood things that very few other ever had. And in a way, though we had lost touch, we were all walking this new journey together in some kind of way. You know, I left that weekend with a new appreciation for home base. And I realized that what was missing for me, what I had left not aware that how much it had defined me, was the idea of home and the idea of the base. Its comfort, its familiarity, its reassurances. It made me realize that I come from somewhere. And I didn't need to move on to each chapter necessarily alone. My journey originates from this home base, and being able to return to it, just even for a moment, made everything else I've done make much more sense.
Great. Thank you, Tom. I wish we had more time to listen to this, because when you were talking about parents, for example, that made such an impression on me. You know, it occurred to me when you were going through the story that none of us are too ordinary to make a difference. We celebrate these moments, and we're celebrating these wonderful defining moments with Dr. Tom Workman and Ms. Sheila Starks Phillips on Storytime, Open Journal. I wanted to make it very clear for the next minute or so that we have left that we want all of you to define your moments at the Houston Storytellers Guild. We meet every other Thursday at Brazos Bookstore. And it is a fabulous venue. It's at 6:45. And we also have some excellent events coming up. And rather than getting to all of them, except Sheila's going to be a celebration, that'll be a terrific one right before Thanksgiving. But go to www.HoustonStorytellers.org and read all about us, please. And come to our meetings. Whether you want to tell a story, whether you want to listen to a story, doesn't make any difference. But for now, I just wanted to thank Sheila and Tom for joining me. We'll listen, hopefully again, get all of you back here on December 10th when we'll be talking about stories of warming holidays. Until then, have a safe, beautiful, and defining weekend. Thank you.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique voice on the Houston airwaves. And rather than rely on commercials or underwriting, KPFT relies on listener donations. Call 713-526-4000 to inquire about membership, or just go to our website, kpft.org. Anyone can produce an Open Journal. Visit our website for details. The program director welcomes your feedback on every Open Journal. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 308. Please stay tuned for Wide Open Spaces up next and World Cafe at noon. Thank you for tuning in to today's Open Journal here on commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.